Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
Griff Griffiths, I was the king of Spain, middle son of a gypsy witch and a West London car dealer, born into a very well-known close-knit large family from Notting Hill. Market trader, tire fitter, professional musician, artist, entrepreneur, furniture dealer, gilder, property. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, but also a lifelong mental health sufferer, and a massive breakdown left him in institution, believing he was the king of Spain. Delighted to be joining us live on the line. Griff Griffiths, Griff, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Giles. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well indeed. You've had a colourful life, to put it mildly. Just going, when you get the press notes, there's a list of employment that makes, you know, is there anything that you haven't done? Astronaut, perhaps?
I've certainly had a very colourful life, Giles, I must admit. And the reason that this book came about is someone said to me, who's the most famous person you ever played chess with? And when I was in the institution, I played chess with God. And this is how it started. So one thing led to another. And that's how I've written a book now. But yes, I've had a very colourful life, my friend. Yes, indeed.
I can imagine that the great almighty has got quite a good opening gambit, to put it mildly.
Well, I'm sure he was cheating, but I'm sure I won. So there we are, Giles.
So tell me a little bit about middle son of a gypsy witch. A gypsy witch now.
Yes.
Come on.
Yes.
Well, my father, it's Friday. We can get a little bit Wiccan. Let's talk about this one then, shall we?
Now, this is the truth. My mum is the seventh daughter of a seventh daughter of a Romany gypsy family. And when my dad came out of the army, I think he just come back from Korea. He came out of the army. And he was a postman, and he ended up delivering letters to the site where they lived in Notting Hill. One thing led to another, and they became as one, yes.
Marvellous. I'm just imagining the thought, because now Notting Hill now is obviously oity-toity, the return of the £15 croissant area. But the thought of a gypsy encampment in Notting Hill would has just made me smile there.
Well, there was a lot of them under the bridges there, where the Westway is now built. Yes.
Oh, of course, absolutely. So from that, so presumably, we'll go. Should we go the cliches? Rough and ready, but loving family, etc.
Yes, indeed. I mean, she knows exactly what we're saying right now, mate. So I'll be very careful not to take the Mickey out of me.
I know. Listen, my goddaughter, goddaughter is currently going through training to be for that very thing. So fear not.
Well, she's what they call a white witch, but if there's any aggravation in the family, we've got a very big family, my mum is the first person they all turn to, because being the seventh daughter of a seventh daughter is something that they all look up to, whereas my dad, he's a very small bloke, and he was an only child, but I think he was the seventh son of a seventh son of one of the seven dwarfs. He's quite a small fella.
So what was school like for you then? Was there a school, Griff, to be honest with you?
So school was fine for me. I'm one of three brothers. Unfortunately, my older brother's passed away now, but I'm the middle of three brothers. But where we lived, we moved to a place called Northolt, which is just outside of Hammersmith, that kind of West London. And the whole school was just full of my family. You could do no wrong, really. I mean, it was like a family gathering every day. That was what it was.
And so from there, you moved into what? You were good with the gab, moved into market trading. Tell me a little bit about what happened then.
What happened was my parents bought me a drum kit. I think I was about 10. And I started drumming at the age of 10. Now, and I'm still drumming to this day. But and at school, I was just a normal kid, trying hard to try to get the girls to fancy me. And then I joined a band when I was 14 years old. We had a record out when I was 14. And all of a sudden, there was pictures of me in the record mirror, the New Musical Express. sounds, and they were the only media of the time that related to music. And all of a sudden, my popularity went through the roof. And girls, and it hasn't changed since, Charles. Not so much the girls anymore. But I had my first record out when I was 14, and one thing led to another. I was a professional musician for nearly 25 years.
Would we know any of the aforementioned bands that you were nobly bashing?
Oh, God. There's a documentary that I've just been part of with a friend of mine called Mark Williams, and
the Natives Friendly? Is that the title of it?
Yeah. Are they hostile?
Fair enough. Yeah.
It's close enough. But the punk scene started in Croydon. I don't know if you're aware of that. With the Damned. The Damned were the first ever punk band, with the first ever single, New Rose. And I was part of that punk scene with a band I was with called the Bad Actors. We've just had a documentary out with a compilation CD of all the bands from Croydon of that time, from 77 to 79, 81. And it was a record that I made when I was 14 years old. It was released again last year, so it's quite a bit of buzz about them. And we were just voted top three films in the Viva La Rock magazine, which is a great publication. I don't know if you're aware of Viva La Rock.
Yeah, I am aware of Viva La Rock. I've spoken to the gentleman behind that.
Eugene Butcher.
Yeah, that's the one. It was an exciting time, wasn't it? Because we'd got out of prog and everybody twiddling around and writing about nights and nights on ice and all that sort of stuff. And suddenly it was, you know, three chords or even less and a thumping sound and off we go.
Well, I hadn't been playing drums very long, and it was when my dad said that, "Come, I'll take you to an audition." And my older brother, who was 2 years older than me, now he was there at the start of punk, so I was too young for it, but I used to go with him. So I think the first gig I ever saw was the Jam, a place called the Greyhound in Croydon. And I think I was only 13 and a half, maybe 14 years old. But if it wasn't for the influence of my older brother, I would never have been there, because I was a bit too young for that scene, really. But when you're following an older brother, I don't think he really wanted me with him, but I went with him to see all these punk bands, yes. And funny enough, Joel, I'm actually in a Jam tribute band as we speak. That's how I get my wages. And I'm gigging tonight, would you believe?
So funny, and strangely enough, about 3 weeks ago, I interviewed Rick Buckler. So there you go. That's a strange how these things happen.
Oh, did you? Indeed? Yes, well, there you are. Well, they're still on tour now, aren't they? We're from the Jam. I think it's him and yeah, it was him on his own without the other two boys, obviously. Yeah, Rick Buckler. Yeah, I mean, yes.
So
he's just got a book out, hasn't he?
He has. That's why that kind of with a friend of mine who's also a witch called Zoe Hughes, and that was why we did the interview. Quite a few things sort of happening, smoothing with celebs. I mean, presumably you have, you know, you have popped with the ladies. You obviously have a bit of a way with words, to be honest with you, Griff. And so obviously a lifetime of close on celebrity beckoned.
Well, when you're in that music industry, you're kind of constantly in the realms of you're moving in those kind of circles. Now, you meet, you know, household names. They don't really become friends. It's more of a handshake and a picture, and then you move on to the next person. But yes, I had an encounter with one of the Kid Creole's coconuts when I met her at a Pet Shop Boys Hollywood party. When was that? In 87, I think.
I saw Kid Creole and the Coconuts played Marbella at that time, and they were, I don't care what anybody else says, Kid Creole and the Coconuts were absolutely dynamite. And so
they're back on tour now, Giles. I don't think they got the same coconuts as back in then, because they're a little bit, but a bit like me, past myself by date, you know what I mean? But yeah, they're great band, mate. Great band, yeah.
And we're not a million miles away from Gibraltar here as well. And I believe that, was it an incident with Rick Astley in the foyer of a Gibraltar hotel? Tell us more.
Yes, indeed. I was over there. There was some kind of convention for the music industry. So I'm over there. My dad was the manager of the band at the same time. And he was also looking after Lisa Stansfield at the same time. Anyway, so I'm over there. And as I'm walking down the stairs, Rick Astley's walking up. And do you remember that band Black Box?
Right on time.
Yes, with the girl model that fronted that project, she walked past me, and I had long hair at the time. She pulled me ponytail. She went ding dong, and I turned around. I said, "Don't you know bloody ding dong me?" And it was Rick Astley sitting there. And so I kind of pushed him, not expecting confrontation with Rick Astley, because who does? Who expects confrontation with Rick Astley? And he kind of pushed me back, and we ended up having a fight. We rolled down the stairs in his hotel, and what was going through my mind, Giles, was I can't lose in a fight to Rick Astley because my dad's watching. You know, I'd never live back down. So anyway, we got to the bottom of the stairs, and would you believe it was split up by two members of ASWAD?
Well, I mean,
no violence, man. No violence, man. You can't write that sort of story, mate.
I mean, the thought of Rick Astley being a bit, you know, a bit short-tempered and you know, throwing a right hook. I mean, because he was, he was the king of style at the time, wasn't he? Never gave him get in on the whole thing. And he
said, listen, you don't expect to have confrontation with Rick Astley. And I put it past any man that I know to not be completely taken aback by it. Now, about 10 years ago, I'm out of the music industry by now, and Rick Astley's hosting this show. I think it was on Channel Radio 4 or something. And I was listening to it with my wife in the car, and it was a phone-in. And she said, phone him up to see if he remembers. And I thought, I just couldn't take the rejection if he said, no, I don't know what you're talking about, mate. Because you never know, he might have a fight every weekend. I've got no idea.
That world, Rick's here, let's get ready to rumble. I can see it now.
Put it this way, Joel, he could have it. He was having it, mate. He weren't backing down.
Oh, you see, it's always the quiet ones. It's always the quiet ones. There you go.
Can you imagine the grief I've got from my mates for all of those years? Or singing that, you're never going to give you up. You know, I've had it all, Joel.
You could have been chinned by Dead or Alive or something, or, you know, worked over by Haircut 100, you know.
Oh, God. But funny enough, Nick Cable doesn't be very far from me. He's only a small fella. I know, you can't be picking up by anyone of that. I wouldn't mind being done by, I don't know, Dave Lee Ross from Van Halen.
Yeah.
He was a karate expert, wasn't he? But I did beat him at arm wrestling in a party in San Francisco. That's another one of my claim to fame.
Hang on. You were in San Francisco with Dave Lee Roth at a party?
Yes. And I beat him at arm wrestling.
Good grief. It's a long way from the West Way, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You honestly, mate, you can't make this stuff up. You cannot make this stuff up. Yes.
And also bumping into a rock legend in Marrakesh.
Yes, we were doing an album cover, a photo shoot for an album cover, and we were given the choice to go to Bournemouth for a long weekend or North Africa. I mean, obviously, where are you going to go to, Giles? I mean, there was no choice there. So off to North Africa we went. Now, the manager of my band at the time was a chap called Alan Bound. Now, Alan Bound was quite a big noise in the 60s. He had the Alan Bound set. He was in the John Barry 7. We're at the airport, and we're on the plane. There was very few people on the plane. We're in the departure lounge, and sitting across is Robert Plant. Now, our photographer was Robert Freeman. He'd done all the Beatles photography. So we're sitting there with Alan Bound, and they all knew each other. So we got introduced to him. One thing led to another. We spent about 10 days together with him in Morocco, traveling around taking pictures for the album cover. And we ended up getting caught up in a bizarre drug deal in Marrakesh street market. But I won't go any further than that because you have to buy the book to read it.
Exactly. And there's also the other thing I do like is the fact that you took what we call, you had a gap decade, which I like that.
Yes, I had a very successful furniture company, and that was when I got out of the music industry. And I had a gap decade, then another 5 years off. Now, I've coined that term there, Giles, a gap decade, and I like that term.
Absolutely. Now, there is some serious stuff in there, because it would be all great if it was all that I did this and then I was grabbed by the coconuts and Rick Astley threw a haymaker and then in the meantime, yes, that was only for personal consumption, honestly, Mr. Plant. But the book is called I Was the King of Spain, and you struggle with mental health, and you ended up, as you said at the beginning, you end up thinking you were playing chess with God and that you were the King of Spain. Well, congratulations for coming back, to be honest with you, Griff.
Well, what happened was I had a very successful furniture company, and I've always been one of these people, Giles, that goes 100% full on. Every kind of plan I've pursued, some of them have been failures, some of them have worked very successfully. But I had a very successful furniture company. I started from scratch, just in a shed in my dad's garden. I ended up having about 12 staff working for me, a couple of sales reps, one for the North of England, one for the South. But the stress from that kind of blew my mind. And for some reason, one Saturday, I just thought I was a Mediterranean monarch. Now, I, as you can see, because you can see me on this Zoom meeting, I look nothing like a Spaniard. And I don't know where that comes from. I even pee in the sun. But yeah, but I was in the Priory in various institutions, and it was a very disturbing time. But I used that negativity when I came out, and I kind of got myself free from that nonsense without the use of drugs. I kept myself fit. I bought a dog. I ran. I swim. I took up boxing again. So I got myself fit. But I used that negative to a positive, and I became a professional comedian for 5 years. And I was, one of my roles was I was the King of Spain. That's how my career comedy career started. But I used what was a terrible negative, Giles, and I put that into a positive. I didn't know what else to do. I just think, I have to make something happen with this. And I, luckily, I managed to combat that nonsense, yeah.
But comedy in stand-up's brutal. I mean, there is no hiding place. I mean, if you're drumming, you can always blame the bass player. So
I do. I blame my bass player all the time. Yeah. But when you're drumming, you're absolutely right. Like, when you're drumming, you're sitting behind a drum kit. You've got the drums, then you've got your cymbals, then you've got a guitar player, then you've got a vocalist, then you've got a microphone, then the audience. But when you're telling jokes, you've just got a microphone and that's it. And you've got a bang audience. It could be anything from being like five people in a small upstairs in the pub to like 2,000 people at the Hackney Empire. And they are baying for your blood. You've got, within the first 2 seconds, they know if you're competent or not. It's almost like they can smell fear like a dog can. And you have to be on the ball. You have to be on the case. But, yeah, I had 5 years of that. I've done three Edinburgh shows in the end. I still got very good friends from the comedy world. Henning Vane, the German comedy ambassador. Joe Wilkinson's a good friend of mine. Lots of good friends from the comedy world. But yeah, it was very, very hard. But I got into the comedy, Giles. I got into it when I was about 40. And most of my peers were about 20 years younger than me. But so after 4 or 5 years, it was becoming quite hard work. I was missing my girlfriend at the time, missing my son. But yeah, I'm really pleased I did it. It certainly opened up a few doors for me. And it gives you a great deal of confidence at the end of the day. You learn a lot from playing like Northern Working Men's Clubs in between the strippers, you know.
I must try it sometime. Yeah, I can see it now. Yeah, indeed. But the book, because I mean, I'm going to say, why do you write the book? But again, it's a discipline. You don't, you know, you just put it down in a legible sense rather than 100 miles an hour. This, I did this and then I did that and then, because you've got to put some structure into it. So quite a challenge, Griff.
Yes, it was indeed. But it was all through lockdown. There's quite a few friends of mine that have done projects. There's a friend of mine called Martin Parrott. He's in a band called The Wingmen, one of the Stranglers, one of the Damned. It's like they're called the punk royalty. Now, they made an album out of the disgusting thing that happened to the world of the COVID, the lockdown. They made an album out of it. They've been on tour. And I spent my time writing my memoirs and writing the book. It's not so much a life story. It's more a whole series of small anecdotes. Like one page could say when I was banned from my youth club, which I won't tell you why. And it goes to the next page when Boris Becker ran my wife over. So it's a lot. There's lots of interesting stuff going on there.
What was your wife doing in a cupboard, Griff?
No, she wasn't in the cupboard, mate. Okay.
Because that's his normal...
Yes, I know. When I spoke to my publishers, they were saying that I should elaborate on that story. They said, Griff, you should elaborate. Say, where was it? How fast was he going? What was her injuries? But all it is one line on one page says, Boris Becker ran my wife over. And whenever I read it, still to this day, it makes me laugh.
I've got a mate who's a photographer, and he famously took the photograph of Johnny Depp heading toward outside the Holland Park Hotel, heading towards him with a plank of wood, and he called that picture "Johnny Depp bought my car" because he got 50 grand for it.
Oh wow, that's lovely. I wish I got 50 grand for my wife getting run over, but unfortunately I didn't.
So I mean, but that's one of the great things, isn't it? Because you've got the insight of. You know, apart from rocking with Astley, of being around what we would call celebs, but not in a hanger on kind of way, and not also in a sort of craving, oh, you're the best sort of person, or I'm having a ruck with you because I'm a better band. It's just it's like you said, it's the weird things that happen, because when Dave Lee Roth has a party, he's not going to have Ozzy. It's not going to be completely A-listed. So you've been on the periphery and have got the funny stories to tell, whilst everybody else is going to be a bit guarded because of lawsuits.
Yes, yeah. Well, when I was working, I was working on an album in LA. I was working at Toluca Lake. It was a Frank Sinatra's son's studio, actually. And one of the stories that's in the book is I got bitten by Frank Sinatra's son's dog. I mean, no, you can't write that, are they, can you, mate? You can't write that. But anyway, we were living in this hotel, and above us was Roy Dotrice. Now, he's the father of... what's her name? Say Betty in
Michelle Dotrice.
Now, back in the 80s, when I was over in America, he was very, very popular on lots of TV shows. He's playing like British villains. Now, he was, again, he was a good friend of my manager, Alan Bound. And through him, we got invited to Rod Stewart's party. Now, I've never met Rod Stewart in my life, mate. Right. But all of a sudden, there you were. But, you know, you meet these people all the time, especially the musicians when you're gigging and gigging. I've met everyone from Alan Jones through to the Beach Boys. But they don't become, very few do they stay friends, because they're in a different world insulting you most of the time.
Griff? Can I ask a question, please, sir? What goes through your mind when you walk in, like you're getting ready to go to a Rod Stewart party? Because...
Well, I thought it was taking the mickey. I thought, yeah, leave off. But it was only because Roy Dotrice was talking to our manager, Alan Bauer, who said, oh, we're going to Rod Stewart's party. And Alan Bauer said, oh, I remember Rod. He said, I'll give him a ring. And all of a sudden, we're there. If I'd have found out that we're going there, I would have probably been terrified, or, you know, would have done my hair or bought myself a new suit. But when all of a sudden, you know, the next morning, you're being picked up in a limo at a Rod Stewart's party, you know, it's a bit weird, isn't it?
Is it canapes? Was it refined, or was it the full Freddie Mercury dwarfs with Salva Silvers with something similar on it?
Well, I'm not too sure if it was his house, but it was certainly that kind of, you know, the sort of place. You know the scene in The Godfather where that bloke's waking up in his house when he's got that horse's head in the bed.
Indeed,
that big
swimming
pool. It looks like that, but I think that most LA premises owned by rock stars will look like that. You know, but there's a story when I was at a smash hit party. I was sitting there talking with some friends of mine, and it just happened that the two girls from Salt and Pepper were there. And out the corner of my eye, and again, this sounds like I'm fabricating it, but I'm not. At the corner of my eye, something was falling from the ceiling. So I pushed this girl out of the way. And you know, one of those sort of 3-foot by 2-foot massive studio lights landed exactly where she was standing. And I saved her life.
So?
And she kind of went, oh. So, yes, literally. And I often wonder now, she ever thinks, you know, if Salt ever thinks, God, if it wasn't for that bloke Griff, I'd be a solo act.
Exactly.
That's the true story.
There's a push it joke in there somewhere, isn't there?
Oh, I've heard so many of those.
Just boom.
You're wasting, mate. Have you ever done stand-up, Charles? Have you ever done stand-up,
No,
mate?
Not. My entire life is a bleeding stand-up, unfortunately and unintentionally. What do you hope that people are gonna learn? I mean, it's a writer's read for a start.
Well, first of all, my publishers have been very pleased. I'm very pleased the way it's going. First of all, I'm amazed that a publishing house would want to put any money into like funding my bizarre stories. But I'm already working on a follow-up book. I'm not really hoping for anything out of it. I just think it's a great achievement. You know, I was asked this by someone the other day, and I'd like to be in pantomime.
Okay, come on. Like, anybody's listening. What role are you thinking here? Are we going buttons? Are we going full out twanky? What are we doing?
No, you know, I'd like to be the genie in the bottle because I'm quite big. I'm quite muscular. I've got a ball there, but there's got to be a bottle big enough, mate.
They can do marvellous things in post-production these days, but we'll see.
They can indeed. They can. But yeah, I'm not really expecting it to go anywhere, but I'm certainly looking for... I've got so many stories now for my follow-up book, and I'm just looking forward to that, really. And like I say, we've got this Are They Hostile documentary that's coming out. I think it's going to be somewhere, I think on Netflix, or someone's talking about it for next year. I'm sorry, for this year, with the album as well. So I'm just looking forward to the whole thing, really, Giles.
It sounds
like the last 2 years have been very exciting, but my whole life's been in. I think that I'm, you know, when you meet someone and said, I was going to do that, I've always been the person that has done. I've never been the person that says, I didn't get around to doing it. I've always given it a go. It's what makes me tick, I think, Giles.
Absolutely. Griff, you're a power of bleeding nature. You're absolutely...
Hey, mate. Yes, I know.
Listen.
I don't know if my parents would say that, but there you are.
Well, hey, so, and all that thing. If people want to find you, please, by all that's good, tell me you do social media.
Well, my Facebook. I'm on a Facebook. I'm 59, so I've got social media isn't really my game. But I'm on a thing called Are They Hostile, which is all about our film and stuff.
Yeah.
But I haven't really got anything about myself. I mean, it's just if you Google Griff Griffiths, you will certainly find me all over the place. But I'm not going to be one of those people. What are they called?
Influencers.
Influencers. Yeah. I don't want anyone wants to get influenced by me, mate.
Griff, mate, you could redefine the entire concept of influencer. Trust me on this one.
Oh, couldn't I just? Yeah, I could start my own line of clothing. Ill-fitting jeans.
.com.
By Griff Griffiths.
Exactly. Yeah. He's wearing ill-fitting jeans by Griff Griffiths. The book is called I Was the King of Spain. And honestly, Madrid's loss is our gain, Griff.
Thank you very much.
The book is called I Was the King of Spain. You'll be able to also virtually download it from our virtual bookstore. Griff, do me a favour, yeah? When you get the second one published, you come in on the show and we're doing an hour, okay?
I would love to come back and sit with you, Giles, mate. I would love to, my friend. Very nice to meet you, Giles.
The book is called Griff. Griff is I Was the King of Spain. Griff, thank you so much for your time today.
Cheers, my old mate. You take care. Be happy.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.